You are listening to The Vitals, a monthly podcast for all things oncology nursing. For even more content, check out oncologynursingnews.com or find Oncology Nursing News on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Hi, everyone. This is Lindsay Fisher, Associate Editor at Oncology Nursing News. In this episode of The Vitals, we met with Matt Iwanek, a licensed clinical health psychologist with the Stem Cell Transplant and CAR-T Therapy Program at Allegheny Health Network, to discuss fully integrated behavioral services. In our talk, Iwanek highlights popular psychosocial treatments like cognitive behavior therapy and acceptance and concomitance therapy, discusses recent advances in the behavioral health space, and underscores the need to normalize behavioral therapy for patients facing a cancer diagnosis.
My name is Matt Iwanek. I'm a licensed clinical health psychologist for Allegheny Health Network. I work in the stem cell transplant and CAR-T therapy program at West Penn Hospital.
And so could you speak to the value of incorporating behavioral therapy into the treatment plans for patients undergoing cancer treatment?
Sure. I mean, we know from years and years of research that cancer is one of the most stressful experiences that anyone can go through in life, particularly types of cancer that have a high rate of recurrence that people are always afraid of, and people that are in survivorship for years still might be struggling with anxiety and worry about having a recurrence. So it's one of the most stressful parts of life. And generally, people are not well prepared to deal with it because we all know there's a possibility of getting cancer, but everybody hopes that they don't get cancer. And it's not something that you learn to cope with or deal with in school. And usually when people get the diagnosis, it comes pretty suddenly. You know, they have some symptoms come on, they're not sure what it is. They go through sometimes a lengthy process of assessment for a diagnosis to see what it is. So they're living with the possibility that this might be cancer, you know, in blood cancers, that might be, you know, several days, you know, even weeks sometimes. I'm wondering whether or not it is cancer. So it is highly stressful. So people who are working in oncology really need to have an appreciation of that and be aware of that. And psychologists and behavioral health professionals have a unique skill set, you know, through our training and our discipline that we can bring to the practice of oncology in order to help patients, families, and clinicians, you know, doctors, nurses, PAs, nurse practitioners deal with the stress of cancer, because it's not just stressful on the patient, it's stressful on the whole family, and it's stressful on the teams that are treating them too. Really, integrated behavioral health care, it's the way to go for the future, and it should be a standard part of treatment for everyone involved in the process.
And could you break down what some of the therapies look like, what the process involved in, and how you help patients specifically?
So there's going to be variability across the board with where patients are receiving treatment. You know, some people just don't have any access to behavioral health treatment, you know, particularly in rural areas. There may not be a psychologist or a clinician to see. So essentially, it's kind of absent, all the way to like a fully integrated program where you might meet with the psychologist on your very first day that you meet with the oncologist. And then work with a behavioral health professional throughout the entire process. The idea is for behavioral health to be fully integrated, meaning you get a diagnosis, you are introduced to the mental health professional who's already working in the clinic that has an established relationship with the other people working in that clinic. And then you can kind of orient them to what behavioral health care looks like, what services are available to them, how they access those services, how often they would see you, what you would be working on, et cetera, and then start on that. I think what's probably more typical is that people will see an oncologist and they might be screened for some type of emotional distress. So maybe they have symptoms of anxiety, they have symptoms of depression, and then a nurse or their provider will refer them to a behavioral health provider that's outside of the clinic. So somebody else in the community that they might have somewhat distant relationship with. So they're not working directly together, but they're aware that they're out there and they try to funnel patients into that location. Then the patient is kind of responsible for contacting that person, making the appointment, getting themselves there, getting introduced to that person for the same time. So that distance really creates a barrier to the patient receiving that care, because there's a physical distance, there's a temporal distance between the time they get the diagnosis and they actually see the provider. And there may be a lot of unanswered questions, like whether or not insurance covers it, and, you know, how do I get there? How do I arrange transportation and so forth? So right now, the current status is there's just great variability in what is available to people and how they access it.
Right. And so at your institution, where you have a more solidified program, could you talk about what cognitive behavior therapy looks like, and motivational interviewing, and acceptance and commitment therapy, and how these improve patient outcomes when they're able to receive them throughout treatment?
Right. So there's a lot of research that supports the use of cognitive behavior therapy and ACT for cancer-related distress. Cognitive behavior therapy, otherwise known as CBT, has been around longer. So this has been around for many years. ACT is a newer form of therapy that kind of grew out of that CBT tradition, but there's strong empirical support for that also. The basis of CBT is that how you're thinking connects with how you're feeling emotionally and physically and what you're doing behaviorally, so that thoughts, behaviors, and feelings are all interconnected. And that if you are struggling emotionally with symptoms of depression or symptoms of anxiety, those can be influenced by identifying patterns of thinking and changing those patterns of thinking, and identifying problematic patterns of behavior and changing those patterns of behavior. So whenever somebody sees a therapist for the first time, there's usually an intake process where you get to know the person. This kind of answers your earlier question too. So the psychologist will take a history, any type of mental health history, a personal history, and formulate a diagnosis, whether or not you meet clinical criteria for a mental health diagnosis. And then they'll work with the patient to establish a treatment plan. So with CBT, the beginning of that treatment plan is usually education about that CBT model that I just briefly described there. And then getting the person to understand how this is working for them in real time on their own. So cognitive behavior therapy is usually pretty highly structured. There's an educational component at first, and there's usually an agenda for the session, like what we want to cover for this hour that we're together. And then at the end of the session, there's a homework assignment. So for folks first starting out in CBT, that homework assignment is usually starting to notice and track different situations that come up, different thoughts that they have in those situations, and then how they respond to those situations and thoughts emotionally and behaviorally. So the person begins to understand, or better understand, that connection between thoughts, behaviors, and emotions. And once they're able to understand that and observe it, then you can start to do more of the therapeutic work. And you look at changing those thoughts or changing those behaviors. I can give you an example of something that's common for cancer with CBT. People often have a fear of becoming a burden to their families, or thinking that their families view them as a burden. So when situations come up during the week, like maybe they need a ride to an oncology appointment, they'll have this thought that I'm a burden, or I'm putting so-and-so out. And then the emotion of sadness or guilt comes up. And that sadness and guilt is really tied in with that thought that I'm a burden. That thought that I'm a burden, that may or may not be true, depending on the situation and the people involved. Family members are often actually pretty happy to help out, because that helps them cope with the person's cancer too. They feel like they're being useful, productive, supportive. So they really don't mind doing these things for the patient. It makes them feel empowered, but the patient may not perceive it that way. They feel like they're a burden. So we help the patient to identify, you know, this is the thought you're having in this situation, and this is why you're feeling guilty. Is that thought that you're a burden really true? So we look for evidence to support that, evidence to refute that. And we help them label those types of thoughts. So that thought that I'm a burden is what we call jumping to conclusions. So somebody can learn to do this on their own in real time. They can notice, oh, I'm feeling guilty about this appointment because I'm thinking I'm a burden. And I've thought about the evidence, and that's not really true. What's true is that this person is glad that they can be of assistance right now. And then you sort of change the emotional reaction from guilt to one of appreciation or gratitude. And it helps the person cope with that situation. the behavioral part of CBT also has to do with getting people to engage in behaviors that are helpful. And usually the recipe for that is something that they either enjoy or something that makes them feel competent. And whenever you're dealing with adjusting to cancer, it's common for people not to be engaging in things that they enjoy or to feel incompetent because of all the chaos that's happened in their life. So we will plan and kind of schedule activities to help the person fully engage in things that they enjoy or help them feel competent. And then that boosts people's mood too. So it is really present focused. You know, it's not what a lot of people imagine therapy to be, where they go and they lay on a couch and they talk about their childhood. It's about, you know, how your actions and thoughts are functioning for you right now and how you can be flexible with them to manage the stress and manage the difficult emotions to the best of your ability. ACT is a little different. It does focus on thoughts and behaviors like CBT does, but rather than like identifying thoughts as jumping to conclusion and then challenging them with evidence, what we teach people are mindfulness skills to notice when that's happening, to take a step back, unhook from it, accept the reality that this is a thought that I have right now in this situation, and then more fully engage with behaviors that they value. So although you might think that you're a burden, we can understand where that thought comes from, let it be there, and then turn our attention to having a conversation with somebody that I love about something that is important to me.
And in recent years, what progress have we seen in addressing the emotional and mental needs of patients alongside their physical treatments?
There's definitely been a growing and greater appreciation for that need, recognizing how big that need is. And consequently, I think that there's been more dedication of time, resources to hiring mental health professionals, trying to get them integrated into clinics, trying to treat the patient as a whole person every time we have a connection with that patient. So the move has certainly been away from like a strictly medical model of chemotherapy, radiation, surgical treatments toward appreciating, you know, the patient as a holistic individual that has these behavioral health needs. So attitudes are changing, access is improving, and the discipline of health psychology and psychosocial oncology in general is producing more and more research every year, you know, to support these ideas and how these interventions can be effective. And with that research under our belt, it's easier to advocate for these resources, whether they be from hospital systems or from like the government, things like that. So there's been progress there.
And so important. And that does lead me into my next question, which is what unmet needs still exist within this space?
Yeah.
And what does the future look like?
There's still a big gap between availability of mental health care and the need for mental health care. So that is certainly something that still exists. I think that that problem is endemic everywhere throughout all systems. So we are on this path to better integrate mental health care from start to finish with the patient. I think that there are examples of places where that is happening pretty well, but I think more often than not, behavioral health care is not fully integrated and needs to be. The two biggest impediments to that are having the staff, like having the therapist that is available in the clinic. So just having enough clinicians, but also getting people, the general patient population, to acknowledge that mental health care is a part of cancer health care. Although we've made great progress within the field of oncology, appreciating the need for mental health care, the patient side hasn't necessarily made that progress. So like patient doesn't want to be labeled as quote unquote crazy or needing a psychologist or something. They see a lot of times mental health care as something that occurs apart and separate from physical health care. This is a type of treatment for a different type of person that is not me. And so there is a stigma there to mental health care from the patient, and that puts up a barrier for the patient's willingness to access that. That's a very important part of this conversation, is using all resources to normalize the need for mental health care for all people. that, you know, this just talking to a therapist while you have cancer does not mean that you are crazy, or does not mean that you're not coping well, or does not mean that you are doing a bad job of managing your cancer and everything that's going on around you. That distress related to cancer is normal. You know, that's part of the process. And working with a person, largely in a coaching capacity, to talk about how you can best use your own motivations, your own reasons, and your own resources, like to better understand how emotions and thoughts and behaviors all connect and manage this most effectively. So I think breaking down that stigma is probably the biggest piece of this and the biggest gap.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Vitals. Be sure to never miss a beat with Oncology Nursing News.